In Memoriam, D.K., December 2007. Written December 24th to December 27th, 2007. Every week, another of the giants dies, leaving us another fraction more destitute. Some leave, and their world, their friends, know it well. Others have gone away and been mourned by all save the returning soldier, the wanderer, who hears of his passing and how it happened as a mere side remark over cocktails, while outside the rampant wind hurls itself, frantically beats against the windows, shakes the very essence of the house, and tugs the Aeolian bell hanging by the front door, again and again, incessantly pleading, begging, as it were, those nearby to take notice. Only in death, after the fact, does this life of one of the quiet giants, stand up, assailing our memories and our sentiments with regret. Why is it that we beat our breasts, iron-ribbed, after the fact, and not on the highway, as he discoursed with us, patiently and without hurry? He, too, was a soldier of conscience, walking his beliefs, standing with the oppressed, mourning their fallen. Among those who actually took part in the struggles, who stood in the barricades against injustice, while we heard about it and discussed it, was he numbered? Yes, he was at Selma to be with the fallen as Saul's kinsfolk, who traveled through the dark and hostile night against hostile walls to rescue his body. Only those who were there and who saw, only they have the right to tell their story, even if it is once again at desultory cocktail parties. It is a winter morning, the day after the storm, one of those mornings when the climb is milder and the land washed somewhat by the fury, the drenching of rain that refused to become snow. An ugly, fat fly awakes from temporary sleep, finds its way out from behind the curtain, flies briefly around the bedroom, bouncing the walls, and disappears into a pile of bags and boxes, going from brief resurrection on a winter's morn straight into the crevices of another oblivion. Outside, a penned-up dog barks, challenging unknown shadows. His clothing was always shabby and worn, and he often appeared in the company of the great, who gathered oft to remember the great. It was pleasant and assuring to see him there, his usual self, willing to talk and be a friend, among the pompous, on creaking floorboards, inside dark and paneled rooms with big windows that overlooked the streets of power and pretense. His mind was truly universal in its reach, and his heart roamed the universe, the range of life, with the scope and freedom of comets. Did he quarrel? He must have, somewhere, but that was not his typical nature, his aim. His was the voice of one who knew his mind, knew his heart, and above all, who knew his purpose, his direction, but who refused to attack others with it. He came in fragments, like unannounced swallows at unexpected seasons, and you had to catch sight of him, or else be left alone in that night's cosmic silence, wondering what it was that you had heard that day, who had spoken, or if anyone had spoken. As for his life, To what river course shall I liken it? Like so many others, he met his share of trouble, of problems, disasters, setbacks, and tragedy. He met them as one of the shabby ones, eking out an existence among the proud, an apostle of social consciousness in this city, this arrogant city that would be New Athens, but whose raiment is that of an increasingly decrepit dowager. He advised and counseled a throng of students, young ones looking for some beacon, some direction, in a city whose lighthouses had long since been snuffed out. He taught classes and ceaselessly gave out, shared, expounded, advocated what he believed in. His code of justice, which to some was heresy, to others good, but yet to many a help. He was not afraid to say what he believed in, walking through the Forum of Indifference on a cold winter day, or crowded cocktail room on blossom-scented spring evening, by day, by night, whenever the opportunity required it. In fact, he was another man for all seasons. Too long have I kept silent, sitting in the shadows of the pronouncements of elders, the cold, empty valley of silent public opinion, the walled-in oasis of shy, indifferent neglect. Too long the years have gone by, spindled out, taking me too, away to innumerable sights. He existed as a distant memory, a living one, but one existing far away over many horizons. Oft have I traveled while memories of him faded like cuttlefish beaks under layers of ambergris. Slowly, as the years move on, the voice stills and the quiet witness to humanity is stilled. No longer tugging at the inner aeolian bells of the heart that exist in most of us, if not all people. He was silenced by time's passing, busy schedules, of course, the grand passage of continents, of loves seen and lost, of family obligations, of books and land and wit, of the encroaching cobwebs of mortality covering all. Many people just moved on as the milkweed seeds which leave their pod, the field of their creation, and blow out over the meadows to a land not far, yet effectively removed from those they nestled with. It is not so with the apostles and their prophets, who refuse to, indeed, cannot leave their words. The fire that smoulders inside them constantly, yearning to come out and be flames again. I knew two such apostles in my wanderings. One loved nature's original condition of purity, and she manned the barricades of her calling, far, far past the times of her peers' campaigns, when all others had compromised their views of youth for the security and servitude of the boardroom. The other was this man, the shabby servant of God. As we went upward and outward over the years, so he remained doing his things and went downwards. Thus, there are two symbols of people in this land, milkweed pods and their seeds, which take flight, floating far away and spawning new fields of green. Silent granite stones encompassing lost fields, marking out the old ideas, now overgrown by forest. It was, in a way, fitting that I heard of his end at a cocktail party in winter, with the talk, the banter of old friends opposed, but not quite suppressed, by the furious wind, by the incessant pleading of the wind, long silent, and refusing to be consoled. Somewhere, in some forgotten chapel, perhaps by the sea, perhaps in the forest, in a place fit for nature's art, gathered two families for a wedding. The people were waiting for him, since it was his task, his job, to marry the couple, surprised at him that he tarried so long in his hotel room. When they sent, they found him where he lay, alone in a hotel room, and not a living soul around him. The cobwebs in the window panes hung motionless, while the few particles of dust, stuck to each thread, sparkled dully in midair, vaguely recalling, bringing to mind a forgotten dream of a field, way out in the scrubland, scattered with diamonds. Here, the aeolian bells are silent, and the wind still. On a forgotten winter morning, not long after, I put away a silver cup, setting it high on a shelf. Bumping against the plates, it rings, as only silver can, awakening my mind to things past, and to him. Outside, the garden is lost under snow, deep drifts. Yet, even there, part of a purple cabbage can be seen, poking through the hard white covering, laughing at winter. Yes, another such spring I should like to see again.